to threaten national property or threaten to commit a crime.
Threaten conduct, other conduct constituting crime. I think what he says is right. Because then you always have to prove that it was a crime. Was he convicted?
Well, I think if you say threaten to commit a crime.
Isn't it very general that. Misdemeanor.
We get into that.
Of course, what we're getting at, though, is it's not so much the threat, but it's the result of this threat.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, there's something on page 76 in tentative draft number 2, I think, that isn't very dang helpful, but this is what they say, unless for any criminal offense, although this category in subsection 3 largely overlaps the preceding 2. Subsection, physical harm to personal property and physical confinement. It has an additional application in a situation like this. A racketeer obtains property from another racketeer by threatening to operate houses of prostitution or illegal gambling enterprises in competition.
Well, I didn't read it with you yet.
Threat to compete would not ordinarily come within section 206.3 because the right to compete is one which under some circumstances in our society may be bargained away. However, for the competition itself would be criminal activity. There is no need to immunize or threaten to engage in that activity used for the purpose of extortion. I suppose that's okay, but it's a little sophisticated, isn't it? That it's going to happen in my town.
Well, what's our wish on this?
What harm is it in this way? Is somebody convince me? I think that they've all used something. Now the Illinois Code, for example, under their section on threat, they just have commit any criminal offense as one.
Threatened to commit any criminal offense.
As used, threatening to menace, however communicated, to A, inflict physical harm, subjecting person to physical confinement, or C, commit any criminal offense. New York has this, and then the Model Penal Code has a form of it. It's one that they, all the code revisions have included language similar to this or like it.
Active part of it in the future.
Why not use it constituting a criminal offense, and then you're eliminating a little loophole there.
The actor or another will in the future. Engage in conduct constituting a crime. The actor or another will in the future commit a crime.
I think it's all right the way it is myself. When you realize that what you're getting at is to stop in getting something by instilling fear, it gets away from being applied to ridiculous circumstances because nobody's going to pay anybody any money because I threatened to shoot off firecrackers when firecrackers aren't allowed.
I agree with that. There is this practical matter. The juries and judges are still a little bit right.
You know, in this case I had last week, the guy ran out of the grocery store with money and two young fellas saw him running down the street with a gun in his hand, and they started to chase him. The guy turned around and started shooting at the boys that were chasing him. And the one that was in front, there were two kids, two 20-year-old kids. The second one said, "Hey Joe, he's just shooting firecrackers, go ahead and chase him." And jump behind him. So the other kid, he kept on running until he got a priest. You mentioned firecrackers. All right. Now, I agree. Let's go. Four, or accuse some person of a crime or cause criminal charges to be instituted against him. There's no problem with that. All right. Five, or expose a secret or publicized and asserted fact, whether true or false, tending to subject some person to hatred, contempt, or ridicule. Now, this is right out of New York. Any problem with that? I don't understand the asserted
fact. Whether true or false.
The asserted fact, publicized and well, all right.
If it's true, which
if it's false, it's not fact. That's why we have a little piece of that, for instance, in our law right now, is the one that if you endeavor to extort from an ex-convict by revealing the fact that he is an ex-convict, it's a true fact, but it doesn't necessarily have to be publicized. And in particular, to extort money from him. That law covers two things: one, to deny employment, or to extort money from him.
Is hatred? Is hatred, contempt, or ridicule sufficiently inclusive?
I think so. Well, I think it is. Now, the 163.470 is the statute of contempt.
Hatred, contempt, ridicule, or what else?
Of course, this is language that you find in a libel law.
Yeah.
It's, it's, you know, generally well accepted legal.
Six, cause a strike, boycott or other collective labor group action injurious to some person's business, except that such a threat shall not be deemed extortion when the property is demanded or received for the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor purports to act. Now, would this exception more logically appear in the defenses?
Oh, I don't think so.
I think it's okay.
What they're saying is that a bona fide representative of a union can make this threat.
Yeah, but it's for the benefit of the union.
We don't want to make,
but he's the only one.
We don't want to make legitimate collective bargaining or something
right.
Criminal.
Yeah. All right.
We have a little problem with the use of the word such a threat. As I read the preceding part of the general statement, we don't use the word threat. We don't care how he compels or induces fear. Is that right,
Kevin? Yeah, that's right. It doesn't make sense as we did it.
So we pick up all of a sudden such a threat, and it's really such a method of, by whatever method he compels or induces the fear.
That's such an act.
Act or conduct, yeah.
Do you want to make it disjunctive?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just test the word conduct. It doesn't necessarily need to be an act. Whereas we usually would be words.
All right, that's such conduct.
Who really has the right to make this... Is there any need to define who has the right to do that?
In other words, who would have the right to
how do you differentiate?
Extort for the benefit of the union?
Yeah. Would you have to be a union member or a business agent or I think what they're getting at is the gangsters habitual backing that need to use this.
For the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor being in whose interest the actor, comma, being authorized to, comma, purports to act.
What about it?
What
about a threatened strike because the employer discharges one employee and the whole crew says, put that employee back benefit of that one employee, or we'll all go out. And that's not an uncommon situation.
Well, they generally claim, however, that what they're claiming is exerting is the protection of employment rights of the union members generally.
Yeah, they're not. They're not asking in that case for property. They're not asking for property by that action, are they?
Well, now, what is property? It's an intangible thing under our definition, isn't it?
Well, you have no problem with salary.
Maybe that word property isn't what it should be used there, then, too.
Well, what this is aimed at, I'm sure, is the gangster who says to the businessman, hey, I have some influence with the union business agent over there, and if you don't get with it and give me some money monthly, I'm going to cause you a strike.
Pay off.
And I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I can pay off on it. And so the businessman says, oh, okay, how much can I stand and how much will you take and that sort of thing. And what we're trying to prevent with this.
Now the comment under Kennedy Draft 2, Model Penal Code, states that this reaches the threat of collecting unofficial sanctions where an official of a trade association or union, for example, is lining his own pocket by employing coercive power, which he is supposed to wield on behalf of his organization. Where the demand is on behalf of the organization, this section does not apply, even though the demand may go beyond any honest claim of right.
The page.
This is page 78. This is because it would be unwise to subject these bargaining processes to serious risk of criminal sanctions, where guilt may turn on nice questions of what is a, quote, lawful objective, unquote, of a strike.
Mm-hmm. This has all been put through the fire, has it?
Yeah, this
is fast.
Through the Model Penal Code deliberations, and then now the language that they use is a little different, but it says really the same thing. There's subsection states that bring about or continue a strike, boycott, or other collective unofficial action. Property is not demanded or received for the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor purports to act.
I think it's all right.
Are we saying that it doesn't, when the demand's made on behalf of the organization, the section doesn't apply even though it's beyond the claim of right?
That's what this guy says.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
You just raise the question of the benefit solely for the
because you raise two testy questions as to whether what is for the benefit of the organization.
Except that such conduct shall not be deemed extortion when the property is demanded or received for the benefit of the group in whose interest the actor purports to act. Now they don't limit the legitimacy of this action. In other words, they don't.
No, this works the benefit. So you don't have to be trying out questions of what is for the benefit of the union and what isn't. As they hope.
Even if a member gets extorts some money from the employer and he doesn't turn it over to the union, then he would be guilty of this arson by extortion. Given the union.
All right, he got it for the benefit of the union, even though he embezzled it in the meantime before he got it there. He wouldn't be guilty of this section.
No.
Well, in other words, they're saying that this demand, no matter how outrageous it might be, if it's being made by the actor on behalf of this group, it may not be criminal.
All right, but we could make it criminal if we qualify our definition of actor, in whose interest the actor of being authorized, being legitimately authorized, purports that, or worse that effect.
It seems to me that the fellow that's obtaining benefits for a union ought to be, that I have democratic processes in effect here, and he ought to be somebody who the group says, yes, he's the one that's our representative, he's the one that should be able to make a demand like this. But maybe that's implied in here. Maybe this is all being said. I don't know.
Well, I think the very fact that they have carefully used the word actor rather than something else would seem to indicate that anybody who is able to instill the fear of a strike, which I assume means somebody's going to have some contact with the organization, and who thereby derives some benefit to the organization, it doesn't matter whether he's authorized to raise pressure or not. Don't you think that's why they use the word actor rather than agent or acting on behalf? And in fact, they use the word purport, which is used sometimes over the kind of a majority purports to that.
Well, with the amendment, let's move on then. And, seven, or testify or provide information or withhold testimony or information with respect to another's legal claim or defense. That's relatively self-explanatory. I see no problem with that. Eight, use or abuse his position as a public servant by performing some act within or related to his official duties, or by failing or refusing to perform an official duty in such manner as to affect some person adversely. Bribery. You appoint me road commissioner and I'll give me $1,000 and I'll appoint you.
Who does that affect adversely?
Affects my pocketbook adversely.
As a taxpayer?
No, assuming that I'm the prospective appointee to whom the bribe is made.
Could that be that unless you give me $1,000, I will not decide the your rate case in your favor?
Or a prosecutor saying, I'll take it, I'll take this to the grand jury if you make it worth my while.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering about the use of the word adversely.
But 169 of your proposed official draft is different. It says take or withhold action as an official, or cause an official to take or withhold action. So they've got away from that against.
This is a section that isn't in the Penal Code, right?
No,
it's
page 169 of the of this body.
It is in there.
In D.
Oh. Take or withhold action as an official, or cause an official to take or withhold action.
Well, this is aimed at the official only, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where the official would say to me, unless I give the official $1,000, and therefore affect myself adversely to me, you kind of see that something happens to me. Or it doesn't happen to me that I've got a right to have it.
What if I, as an attorney, go to the clerk and say, look, I'm on the file of this paper, and he says, get lost, I'll be $25 under the counter, or I don't file. It's the client that's affected adversely there rather than the attorney.
Yeah.
But it's still extortion.
Yes, and when I was talking about adversely a while ago, I was not thinking about the fact that it's directed right at the public official and nobody else. Use or abuse of his position as a public servant. So as to affect.
But if the property isn't delivered, the act or another will in the future use or abuse his position as a public servant by performing some act within or related to his official duties, or by failing or refusing to perform an official act in such manner as to affect some person adversely. I think it's better than the Model Penal Code.
Yeah, I think it's all right. Yeah. All right. Like the district attorney tells the gambler, either give me a 10% of you take, or we'll prosecute you.
Right. But if the district attorney says that if you don't close your place of business down where we suspect you're doing some gambling, if you don't knock that off inside of 2 weeks, I'm going to post policemen at your door or harass you. Is that
covered under the defenses, I think, yeah.
No, he's not. No. That's right.
Okay, A.
No, that's right.
And this surely does relate to the judge that convicts a woman of prostitution and puts her on work release. Phil off did last week. Nine.
You said what?
Performs any other act which would not benefit the actor, but which is calculated to harm another person's health, safety, business, calling, career, financial condition, reputation, or personal relationships.
That last is plural.
Relationships.
Now that just expands the model penal code approach. There the language they use is inflict any other harm which would not benefit.
Isn't that better than to specify a whole bunch of things here that would make the that would limit the applicability of it to one of these things, including plural relationships?
By instilling him a fear that property is not suitable whether the actor or another will in the future. Well, inflict
right
any other harm which would not benefit the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Any strong reasoning why we should not substitute the moral penal code subsection here?
Oh, I don't feel strongly that strong about it.
This so moved. Sub G, 223.4, be substituted here. Now, do we have a motion that, as amended, section 6 be approved by the committee?
I so moved.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Not seconded. Now we go back to page 2 and we have F and G left to consider here. I'm going to suggest that we consider G first because I think that's going to be relatively quicker. G is by obtaining services is provided in section 9 of the Act. That's larceny of services. Now, Kathleen and Don, this is lifted from where?
Well, that's taken from Model Penal Code. I may have made a minor change to that. I don't think so. My recollection is that's taken from the section on margins are taken directly from the model of unicode.
This
I've changed it all.
This takes our defrauded innkeeper, defrauded taxi cab driver, etc.
Sergeant sends the squad out to paint his house.
What?
The sergeant sends the squad out to paint his house. Instead of the government's house. Because
Wayne's largely services includes labor, professional service, transportation, telephone, or other public service. Accommodation in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, admission to a person commits larceny for the purpose of which you know is available only by deception or threat, or by a false token, or by other means to avoid payment for the service. Now, don't we, by deception or threat, are we running headlong into larceny by extortion when we're talking about threat here?
Mm-hmm.
And are we running headlong into false promises when we talk about deception and the theft by deception that you're going to write up for us?
Well, unless you deal with services in the other section, though,
we haven't here before had a claim of larceny services at all.
That's nice. Of course, the reason I put that in there, and the reason I left it in there, I think that, you see, we don't define property to include services.
Yes, I agree.
Correct. But you would define property to include electricity, maybe. Because electricity is not a service. It's someplace you got to take care of that.
I like to have it because I never have like to give the hotels or innkeepers a monopoly on using the criminal law for a bill collector. That would give everybody that. Like if we have it. But I agree with them that in a way it overlaps the extortion.
Guy comes in to me. He wants me to represent him in police court. I do. I bill him. I'm stupid enough not to get the money first. And I bill him. He has a payment. Larceny of professional services.
Yeah, or comes in and gives you a long song and dance about how good his credit is. Representing the long drawn out litigation, and he can't pay it. You should have known he could.
But you've got to prove deception, threat, or
you deceived me. You deceived me when he made me think his credit was good and then he had let it go.
Gave me a false credit reference. False credit report.
Proof would have to be by something other than simply the fact that he didn't perform.
Well, that says or by false token. Crack that word or out there.
Set aside a debtor's prison before the mark.
No. Well, I think this is a pretty doggone broad section.
You bet it is.
Crime to induce a doctor, architect, engineer, or lawyer by false representations to render services, since no quote property unquote is obtained.
Yeah, but it's still a crime even if they don't have a lien.
Right, no, I meant the picture. You've got some civil remedy, right? You've got some
Yes, it is, but it isn't stealing when you, it might make you when you don't pay your fees that were earned. I mean, I'm thinking of cases where some mother's kid is charged with a serious crime and calls me up and says, I can't blame her, promises me the world if I'll represent that kid because she thinks I'm the only guy that can get him off. And she hadn't got a chance of paying me. And I believe her. I take that on. It's a civil debt. There's lots of those situations in the law business.
Oh, is there a way to make a distinction here between... anyone think of it? I tend to agree.
Well, you know, the biggest problem that a DA has is a guy that sits on the municipal court desk and has to decide whether he's going to authorize a complaint for NFF check or for defrauding innkeeper or whatever. And aside from the problem that this is going to create for defending some of these cases, it's going to put a terrible burden on the police apparatus, I think.
Yes, for instance, would it be a malfeasance on the part of a district attorney or a judge for not issuing a complaint in one of these cases where it's perfectly valid, it's on face, has a good prima facie case, yet he refuses to issue it's just as a malfeasance in office? It bothers me quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I sure see the need for the statute. Well, I think it's there.
Well, maybe it would be a little more palatable if you required a false token, so that it's plain fraud that you got by which you got the services instead of a broken promise.
Well, our defrauding in the innkeeper section, as you know, it comes in under the general classification of fraud rather than larceny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if, in line with your suggestion, that maybe we don't look more toward this being covered in the section of fraud. Forgery, fraud. Because what we're really talking about is fraudulent conduct rather than a larcenous taking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Aren't there some states
that
have
that actually expressed that one about taking money or services by false pretenses?
That's right.
They're
together in that category.
Well, I don't think that in the overall scheme of our revised code that it necessarily has to be in the theft provisions. I think we're going to need some place in the code, a comprehensive statute to cover this type of thing. Otherwise, you're going to have things such as your taxi cab frauds, defrauding an innkeeper, the things that are covered on a hit and miss basis now by specific statutes, just out in the cold.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that this might well be covered under fraud and make it the false token.
Can you get into it by the intent of the individual? It seems to me that in where you really have larceny, then you have to have the intent. Now, in the civil case, where they have their power turned on, how do you distinguish? Lawyers that tell me, I don't know. I'm all mixed up on it.
Well, we have fraud. We have regular larceny. larceny. And we have larceny by deception, don't we? Let's delete section 9 and reserve it to the section on fraud, with the understanding, of course, that we're going to have to comprehensively review both chapters when we have them in front of us to make sure that we don't leave any holes. Now, with that in mind, let's go back to take care of everyone except receiving stolen property as provided in section 8. Now, you're getting tired? For purposes of the crime of receiving stolen property, receiving means acquiring possession, control, or title, or lending on the security of the property. Now that's a definition. Shouldn't that definition be in the general definition? No.
Well, the only place the phrase is used is in the one crime. We have followed somewhat the policy in drafting of trying to limit those to a particular crime to read and
A person commits larceny by receiving stolen property if he receives, retains, or disposes of property of another knowing that it has probably been stolen, unless the property is received, retained, or disposed of with the purpose to restore it to the owner.
That's the model thing that goes straight out.
And lastly, the insurance is covering another thing, the insurance buyback. Where the insurance company buys back the property. Your definition of knowing or knowledge that you talked about earlier might, by using that here, manage to eliminate using that word probably.
I think that too. In other words, employ the same.
He knows you had good, has good reason to know
that it was stolen.
What is the receiving and concealing site?
It's 165045.
Any person who buys, receives, or conceals or attempts to conceal any stolen money or property, knowing or having good reason to believe that it was stolen. We have. In the Supreme Court, you know, in 1966, handed down an opinion saying that you were within the statute if you either received or concealed.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you eliminate conceal?
Well, I think that would be covered as largely as withholding. That would be a withholding, wrongful withholding. The definition says receiving means acquiring possession, control, or title, or lending on the security.
You eliminate the withholding.
Yeah, he couldn't very well conceal it without acquiring possession of it, could he? Maybe so. We don't presently have.
Of course, we also say in here, if he receives, retains, or disposes.
You say acquire.
Under sub 2.
Oh, yeah.
I have some notes. Nice some notes on this. Let me see.
I feel something.
Larceny by receiving stolen property. If he receives, retains, or disposes of property of another knowing that it has probably been stolen, unless the property is received, retained, or disposed of with the purpose to restore it to the owner. Now this is in toto from the Model Penal Code, right?
And in the light of that definition there, the pawnbroker has received it if he loans money on the security, whether he ever sees it or not. Doesn't ever have to have control or possession. But his security isn't where to hold.
The present law is. Well, we exclude money, although by. The present law says any person who buys, receives, or conceals, or attempts to conceal any stolen money or property, knowing or having good reason to believe that it was stolen. Well, money is included in our definition of property.
Yeah.
But why don't we say, just to get this rolling, a person commits larceny by receiving stolen property. If he receives, retains, or disposes of property of another, knowing or having good reason to believe that it was stolen, unless the property is received, retained, or disposed of with the purpose of restoring it to its owner. Or how about with the purpose of immediately restoring it to its owner?
Is that better than with the purpose to restore it to the owner?
Why do you want immediately in there?
Well, because I've got it, I say, well, I was going to return it. But I've had it for a month, or 2 months. You're my next door neighbor.
That would be some evidence that you didn't get it for that purpose.
Boils down to an evidentiary question. Maybe you shouldn't put it in the statute.
We just resolved that we're not going to put concealing in here. Is there some reason for eliminating that?
What, again, is your reason for eliminating the bond?
Well, for one thing, I think that damage is done here by retaining it, whether it's concealed or not. And I think that this was one of the things that the Model Penal Code was trying to get away from.
Well, if you're a member of a group of three or four, and they bring this, maybe you weren't actually in on the receiving of it, and you weren't in on the disposition or the retaining of it, because it's buried in your neighbor's chicken house. That you're concealing it. The policeman comes to
you. You mean the neighbor who has the chicken house is concealing?
No, he doesn't even know about it, maybe. Then the policeman comes to you and says, where's his property? And you say, I didn't receive it, and I don't have it now, and I'm not going to dispose of it in the future. What are you talking about? And so the officer ducks his tail between his legs and walks away.
There was that situation where they were able to prove concealing and couldn't prove receiving, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't remember how it was.
If
there are situations where they can prove concealing and can't prove anything else, that should be criminal conduct.
I think it's a simple enough matter to assert after retains. If he receives, retains, conceals, or disposes.
Now, before you vote on that, let me tell you what the statements, the comments, the Model Penal Code, being the same on other things, that many legislatures went on to cover buying and concealing. It seems clear that the essential idea sought to be expressed is acquisition of control, whether in the sense of physical dominion or of legal power to dispose. The definition of receiving is correspondingly broad. The provision goes beyond present laws in reaching a person who acquires title to stolen property otherwise than by purchase, and in expressly covering loans and advances. I don't think it would hurt to have conceal in there if you want it in there, although I think conceal would be covered in
I do too,
in
but
the draft the way it is now.
Yeah, I can't imagine how you could conceal it without also doing some of the things that are in here.
Acquiring control, for example. If you conceal it, you're certainly controlling it.
Yeah.
And also then withholding it. Commits larceny by withholding.
And he's a conspirator for sure in the situation I set up. But
now,
you have to prove conspiracy.
The definition that we have in subsection 1 of section 8 doesn't say anything about withholding.
Yeah,
well, but I'm looking back at the original statement in section 2 as to what constitutes the. A person commits larceny when, with the intent to deprive another of property or appropriate property, he wrongfully takes, obtains, or withholds such property from the owner thereof by means of.
All right, now that's one.
Receiving civil copy. That's where I was looking at the withholding.
But we've adopted a
separate
definition here in this section, mm-hmm. which suggests to me that this section doesn't refer back for definition.
But deprived under our definition of deprived under section 1.
And acquires, too. Requires possession.
Well, deprived means to withhold
yeah.
property or cause property to be withheld.
Mm-hmm. where are you referring to the pride, Noah?
Yeah. And inquire. Oh, yeah, on page one, section one of our draft number two.
Well, now, but the word pride isn't employed in section eight.
Well, but don't you have to read section two and section eight together?
Well, do you? I'm a little bit confused because you're going to work on combining sub one and sub two of section two. Wrong for taking, obtaining, or withholding. Any one of the following ways, and then you enumerate them, and then you go down. Wrongful taking, obtaining, or withholding by receiving stolen property as provided in Section 8. And then you say, for purposes of the crime of receiving property, receiving means acquiring, possession, control, or title, or lending on the security of the property. It seems to me that for purposes of Section 8, this definition here is all that's applicable under the language that you've employed. And that you exclude.
We can take care of that proposition by putting the definition that's now in section 1 of section 8 back under the definitions generally, couldn't we?
You mean, that is to say, receiving?
Mm-hmm.
I think receiving, should be under the definition of section 1. And then, section 8 should read simply, a person commits larceny by receiving stolen property if he receives property of another having or knowing or having good reason to believe that it has been stolen, etc. And in the definition in section 1 include retain, conceal, dispose, acquire, appropriate, all those things within the definition of receiving.
I can't see any harm in what you suggested. It looks fine. It looks like it's well reasoned.
Well, you're way ahead of me.
Well, no, what I was going to say was this. To the extent that you can live with some word-for-word model penal code propositions or some word-for-word New York, Michigan, or Illinois, to the extent that you can live with them, ultimately we're going to get a pretty good body of uniform decision maybe that would be helpful. And if a great effort is made to change that, then we're going to lose some of that decisional material, I think. But I sure see the wisdom of what you're doing. I'm not griping at all. There's some merit in trying to for uniformity, maybe. I'm delaying us, but that's
kind of delaying us. No, you're raising a real cogent point.
Sorry about that, but I see so many flaws and so many holes, for instance, in this model code. If we adopted, if every state in the union adopted this model penal code, this year, the first proposed, the catastrophe.
Well, I'm sure you're right.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're right.
So we have to. Yeah.
They keep changing it.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry. John, go ahead.
I was just wondering what Kathleen thought from the standpoint of just draftsmanship on this. The idea of having it under general definitions, since the only place it's going to be used is.
Oh, that doesn't bother me. I guess I'm still sitting here mulling over the reading that Senator Burns gives us, that you've eliminated part of the definition by having back to have separate sections. That bothers me as a matter of taking the reading. But I would assume that we aren't going to end up, and I don't know if I'm right, about receiving property, you know, having just one use of the term in place else. Even if we are, well, it doesn't tell me any ticket. Move it over to play with it. I mean, by moving
staff and was directed to broaden the definition of receive to include conceal and at least for purposes in the next draft, put this in the definition section.
My own thinking is that we don't need conceal. It doesn't do any harm to have it.
No, but if it doesn't do any harm to have it, let's have it.
Well, we have lots of worries.
Because I think it does some good.
Okay.
That's all. I kind of like the approach you took to it there. It seemed reasonable, logical to me. So I'd still move.
Four. Okay. All in favor say aye.
All right.
Somebody's going to have a hard time deciphering what to do.
I think
you guys
should know it's like just going to have a sentence written.
Okay. Now, with that, we have gone through section two, and we're finished with that. We've approved section one. Actually referred section two back for more work, and we're going to come next to section 10, which is right of possession. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Don, are we following the format that you essentially suggested?
Yes, oh yeah, as far as the agenda is concerned. And Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering now if I think perhaps this agenda might be a little overly ambitious or something. I wasn't trying here. Now, if we want to, you might want to try to get through this agenda, or at least a part of it today. You might want to recess for lunch here and come back. We have substantially, we have a great deal yet to get through here. Assuming that you want to try to finish it today.
Well, let's look at it for a minute before we go to section 10. We're not going to get to bad checks or credit cards today. I think that's our consistent.
I have the section on defenses, which
yes,
is new material.
And you also have the section on unauthorized use of motor vehicles. I would like to get to them. You and I had hoped that today we could take affirmative action on this draft number two, maybe refer it to the full commission. It's obvious now that we'll have to have another meeting on this. Mm-hmm. What's the committee's wish? What do you think?
It seems to me that since we have to have another meeting on this anyway, might as well postpone the rest of the agenda for that meeting, haven't we?
How controversial are these remaining subjects?
Well,
we're going to have to go back and have a redraft in a second.
Of course, we can just go through and redraft the sections that you want changed, and the rest of it will just leave the way it is.
I think the preliminary draft section, or I'm sorry, the defense section isn't going to take very much time. I think we'll go right through that, maybe even approve it today.
Let's do that.
All right.
One more. Fine.
I'm
not
really
doing
it.
Yeah.
You
want to
be getting ready
No,
all right. Why don't we break for 10 minutes and have a cup of coffee? Would you rather do this than to break for an hour?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Section 10, the right of possession, on page 7 of preliminary draft 2. And this is the question that I originally raised, and Kathleen pointed out to me that what was
handled in the definitions on the first draft, you put back here in section 10. We've been over this before, and well, we were over it in our last subcommittee meeting, and I had no quarrel at all with it. Does anyone else? It simply defines the right of possession.
Well, does subsection 2 make it possible? No, it doesn't. I was going to say make it possible for one joint owner to be guilty of larceny from another one.
Yeah, what's the meaning of this section? What does it do? Partner from partner and so forth.
Well, that a joint or common owner shall not be deemed to have a right of possession superior to that of any joint, any other joint or common owner of the property.
Seems to me that it means that a joint owner cannot steal from a joint owner and a partner cannot steal from a partner. That's a civil thing.
That's exactly what it says, and this is here again, this is a New York approach. This is not the modern penal code. What it does, it doesn't change the law that people in this relationship cannot steal from each other. Now, I anticipated this would be a fairly controversial point. Now, there's certainly like arguments to be made on both sides, whether or not you want to retain this kind of approach, or whether you want to say that a joint or a common owner can steal from a co-owner.
Well, does this get into the question of definitions, and this wouldn't obviate embezzlement by an agent, or well, I'm thinking of a corporate situation where I'm a stockholder, and so in that sense, I'm a common owner.
Not of a legal title.
Title as incorporated.
All right. That's right. So there's no problem. All right.
This is
pretty
rough
partnership.
This is partnership.
Yeah, but first one, a thief can steal from a thief.
Is that what that says?
Mm-hmm. You can convict them both all the way down the line.
Yeah, the first thing.
That's
yeah.
Quiet
thing.
I wonder. Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Problem 3. In the absence of a specific agreement to the contrary, a person in lawful possession of property shall be deemed to have a right of possession superior to that of a person having only a security interest in the property, even if legal title to the property lies with the holder of the security interest pursuant to a conditional sale or contract or other security agreement.
In the absence of a specific agreement to the contrary, saves it, and it keeps a mortgagee from foreclosing his own mortgage, doesn't it? Without following the statute.
I'd like to respond to by this. It seems to me that this is in a sense covers a situation where I bought a car and there's a mortgage on the car and I take it out of the state. But there's another part of the model penal code at least that penalizes fraud on creditors.
Yeah.
And so that takes care of that kind of a situation. The last session we had, I thought this changed the Oregon law, and I think it kind of looked like it does.
Well, it's saved by that first clause, isn't it?
Well, in the absence of specific agreement to the contrary.
See, the agreement to the contrary is what gives the right of the mortgagee to do whatever the agreement says. But unless he has an agreement to take possession of it,
he can't go and grab it from the guy.
I buy a car, title remains in A.B. Smith. I've got possession of it. I can do whatever I want, even though they...
Yeah, unless you have agreed on that.
Right. Yeah, doesn't conflict with our present law, or does it?
Well, I thought it, but it's okay. I think it's all right if there's going to be another section that takes care of fraud on creditors.
Yeah.
Now, how does this affect the bailment situation as far as rented cars?
Well, it's covered by the agreement of bail.
There's a rented car. You always have a contract or a leased car. You always have a contract that they have. They know what
they're doing. Not the
owner. He's in lawful possession.
I wonder where this three came from, by the way. What's the source of it?
Source is New York.
And what did they say about it?
Has this New York been on the books long enough to be tested by
65?
No, it hasn't. This is 67.
Yeah.
It just seems to me that all it does is to keep a mortgagee or holder of a conditional sales contract from taking the law in his own hands to foreclose his contract or mortgage in the absence of an agreement giving him that right.
Are you thinking that would serve a practice? I know it's common rate in Illinois, the one, if your car payment comes due and you don't make it, you go out the next morning and your car may not be there. You run down to the police station, my car's been stolen, they look up and say, oh no, it can't, the company took it back.
Okay.
They have notified us of this, they repossessed. But it's a self-help kind of repossession. You don't have any notice of it or anything else. In some way in the contract, you evidently agreed to the fact that they can...
Well, then you could still do that, because this is in the absence of an agreement, specific agreement.
But this would require that be explicitly stated in the contract that they have right to immediate repossession.
In the fine print.
In the fine print.
No problem on that.
I'm not sure if you have a contract or a statute like the one, but it's so common that the police station needs to get kind of...
No, it's an everyday thing.
Okay. What's the committee's wish with regard to section
8? We adopt.
Move and second that we adopt section 10 as is, and may the record show that after 4.5 hours, we finally got one section that we're adopting just like you wrote. Be all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Now,
and this is a section I thought I'd have most trouble with. But I won't dwell on that.
You always send the jury out late in the afternoon.
You're going to have trouble with section number two.
Well, two and three both.
I tell you, I think you still might have, I think it has a big hurdle yet. But
oh, yeah.
All right. 11. For the purposes of this, I guess you're saying act, aren't you, or chapter, or whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether we want to say the laws relating to larceny or the whole criminal code or whatever, so if that would be the purpose of the point.
Now, let's go into this, but we might have some problems here, and maybe we'll want to skip over it to defense, but let's try it. Except as otherwise specified in this section, value means the market value of the property at the time and place of the crime, or as such cannot be satisfactorily ascertained, the cost or replacement of the property within a reasonable time after the crime. Now, let's stop there. Because in the Model Penal Code on page 165, say the amount involved in the theft shall be deemed to be the highest value by any reasonable standard of the property or services which the actor stole or attempted to steal. Now here you're saying the market value of the property at the time and place of the crime, and in the Model Penal Code they're saying the highest value by any reasonable standard. Now, you deviated.
Really, this is better than
that. Should we say the reasonable market value, or do we need to say reasonable?
I think Martin Petty's got a lot of ready built in meaning that
yeah.
was not necessary.
All right.
Willing buyer will pay to a willing seller.
Yeah.
Don't have to define market. Market's right, it's well defined in the law, right?
I think so.
All right. How does that measure up to our present Oregon law, Captain?
On value, on vis-a-vis Larson.
Right off in.
This is the market value under larceny cases now is a accepted method of establishing the value of the stolen property.
It's not statutory, is it?
No, it's not.
I see nothing wrong with it.
Actually, I would suspect that the second part of it that you're going to rely on an awful lot of the time anyway, and that is replacement value.
Well, isn't that just some evidence of the market value?
Mm-hmm.
Except for the fact that, for instance, of the theft of an article that may have depreciated in value because of, rather than enhanced in value because of the secondhand and used and so forth, but the replacement value then might be higher than what you could get on the market.
Well, are we going to define value here not only for property but also for services? And if so, say.
Don't you not, for the time being, the services
section? Services going
to be. And this is value of stolen property, not stolen services.
All right. This would be limited to property.
All right. Okay. Two. Whether or not they have to issue your list of certain written instruments, not including those having a readily ascertainable market value, shall be. Evaluated as follows. The value of an instrument constituting evidence of debt, such as a check, draft, or promissory note, shall be deemed the amount due or collectible thereon or thereby, such figure ordinarily being the face amount of the indebtedness, less any portion thereof which has been satisfied. Why ordinarily? Why use the.
Because there may be other considerations involved.
I steal a bad check. NSF check. Maybe I don't want to scope that in the thing either, but that's worthless.
How about a promissory note something for $10 signed by Abraham Lincoln?
Which has a great deal more of that.
Rather than the face
value. Historic value. Unique.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
The word ordinarily takes that into consideration. That situation. In other words, that there may be other considerations besides the face amount.
This would be the first thing you'd look at, would be the face amount. It wouldn't necessarily be
the whole. The reason you would steal a check or a draft or promissory note is you doggone things on file in somebody's office and you want to get it and destroy it.
That's one reason.
That's the reason for that, I think.
Well, it could be negotiable. Also, maybe to learn to forge your signatures.
Yeah, right. This happens.
Well, I would say constituting evidence of a debt, such as a check draft, or should we say, including but not limited to a check draft or promissory note, to make that a little bit more inclusive.
Now, what was that again?
Well, we're saying the value of an instrument constituting an evidence of a debt, such as a check draft or promissory note, could that more properly be made to read constituting an evidence of debt, comma, including but not limited to a check draft or promissory note?
Mm-hmm. I go for that.
Okay, I so move.
Then goes ahead and says, shall be deemed the amount due or collectible thereon or thereby. Which to me limits or makes
Doesn't this, that first down to there say that the value of it is the amount due or collectible thereon?
Right. Right.
There's nothing collectible on Abraham Lincoln's note.
Why are you saying that that renders unintelligible the second clause?
Yeah. We've already said that's what the value of it is. And then we say, let's figure ordinarily be the face amount.
Shall be doomed the...
Oh, that can, yeah, that's all right.
The value of an instrument constituting evidence of debt, including but not limited to a check draft or promissory note, shall be deemed the amount due or collectible thereon or thereby. Period. Now,
I can think the Abraham Lincoln example, which probably might be out, but I would imagine that there are documents of this type which are still collectible, but which the value may lie in the signature still rather than the face value. But I would suspect not the most frequent types of occurrence with anyone.
President Kennedy's. He wouldn't have anything outstanding.
There's a set off on this by way of defense anyway, isn't it?
Maybe B would take care of Abraham Lincoln anyway. Would C take care of the Lincoln situation?
This came right out of New York, right?
Yes, it did.
What's the rationale for that last clause that we're considering with
such figure ordinarily being the face of
I think it just opens it up to
weakens it, yes.
I think it weakens it.
Well,
it seems to me
if you have a promissory note, what do we do about the interest?
That's the amount due.
That's due
or collectible. That's right, not due. It's amount due.
Up to the date that you swiped.
Yeah, that should be.
That's the amount due at the time of it.
Sometimes it's a heck of a amount of money.
Time of these.
That was it then, then.
Well, I'm afraid New York isn't too helpful in your comments with respect to this section. But
I'm suggesting that we insert a period after thereby and delete the remainder of the. So there's two proposals. I'm moving two amendments to 2A. One, the including but not limited to, and B, and the second one, the deletion of the remainder of the sentence
after
that period.
I second the motion.
Move seconded that. So I'm in 2A, all in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye. And would aye.
All right. Now, B, the value of any other instrument which creates, releases, discharges, or otherwise affects any valuable legal right, privilege, or obligation shall be deemed the greatest amount of economic loss which the owner might reasonably suffer because of the loss of the instrument. Now let me read that in its entirety. Whether or not they have been issued or delivered, certain written instruments, not including those having a readily ascertainable market value, shall be evaluated as follows. The value of any other instrument which creates, releases, discharges, or otherwise affects any valuable legal right, privilege, or obligation shall be deemed the greatest amount of economic loss which the owner might reasonably suffer because of the loss of the instrument. Now that covers Abraham Lincoln, doesn't it, Kathleen?
Except for the any other,
does that create or be release or discharge provided by legal right. Abraham Lincoln said.
I'm not sure. I think maybe you might get the Abraham Lincoln situation when you say whether or not issued or delivered certain instruments, not including those having a readily ascertainable market value. Now you might find that readily ascertainable through rare documents collected or something like that. So I think that's covered one way or another.
Where's the whether or not
this becomes something other. It's valued not because of it being any kind of instrument, really, but because of the signature. So it may even be covered by one.
Of course, this sub B is really intended, I think, to get at the whole thing like deeds.
Option to purchase.
The deed to marriage would be worth what marriage is worth.
Only if the loss of it would deprive you of the value of actually being worth it.
If I'd forgotten the recording,
I couldn't otherwise establish or release the lawsuit. The guy that executes the release comes and steals and then sues. I can't prove I ever had the release.
Mm-hmm. Or you get a release and the guy you got it from dies and the release is stolen and the heirs don't know anything about it.
We had a corresponding section for Oregon law covering this area. My thought is that there's nothing necessarily repugnant about this. So let's move on. Now, C3, when the value of property can't be satisfactorily ascertained, shall be presumed to be an amount less than $100. Now, we don't have any corresponding provision to present law. I have a question with respect to what kind of a presumption.
Yeah, what's the meaning of satisfactorily? We don't use that
in. We don't use that in criminal law, do we?
No.
Well, ascertained. We could use a
reasonably.
Use a reasonable man's standard.
Yeah, reasonably might be a better word. Yeah.
We've got that up here in section 1 and 2, I think.
Satisfactorily ascertained. Yeah. Part of doubtful value and all that sort of thing. Of course, sub 3 would be the same as our present law, although it changes the amount, less than $100. But in our present larceny law, if you prove larceny, you don't prove value, then it's petty larceny.
Yeah. But the reason I object to the word satisfactory is I don't think there would get any decisions about them much anyway. Define what that means. We do have a lot of decisions unreasonable.
All right. Is it suggested that we change in sub 1 satisfactorily and reasonably as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So be it. Is it implicit that this is a disputable presumption? It has to be a disputable presumption because there was a reversal a couple of years ago where, under similar presumptive language in the statute, the court neglected to construct it as a disputable presumption.
I don't see where the problem would ever arise in a criminal case.
What do they care for you?
It's presumption. It's a defendant's presumption. I don't think the practical matter would ever come up unless the state ends up with much broader rights to appeal than it has presently.
But the legislature can change it to an exception. Almost did.
Well, that's sure it's possible.
Let's let's make those changes reasonably, and inserting reasonably rather than satisfactory, and let the record show that we approve section 11 as amended, right?
Yeah, that's like a general.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carried. Now, section 12 is petty larceny, and a person commits petty larceny when he steals property. Now, here we're going to this back to the common law generic term steal, which implies aspartation, and we've been talking all along about doing away with aspartation as a requirement, right? So are we getting into an ambiguous area?
No, because steal is a generic term. If we said larceny, there would have to be caption and aspartation, but if we say steal, this is any acquisition of property unlawfully, I think. Historically, maybe by stealth, but steal would include, I think, larceny, embezzlement, false pretenses, and so forth, whereas larceny would have to have the caption and aspartation.
Well, then maybe we better put in a definition of steal in the definition section of page 1, huh?
Or else say a person commits petty larceny when he acquires property by theft, if we change to theft. If we change the theft.
That's like property includes either personal property or real property. The present definition. Yeah.
What goes in that blank? What you ask me is they what?
Whatever we decide it's going to be, a misdemeanor or violating a misdemeanor or whatever.
It's a felony.
It's a felony.
Yeah,
in other words, we left blanks all through here, and when we get over to the other degrees of larceny, we left those blank also. These are going to fit in. Well, what I was trying to do here was keep it simple, and maybe it's too simple. By using the word steals, but
well, we don't attach any value to petty larceny, do we?
Well, that's the reason why I asked that question.
Why does it say a person commits petty larceny when he wrongfully takes, obtains, withholds, or appropriates the property of another of a value of less than $100?
We've talked about larceny of property under any and all of these sections back here, haven't we? So what doesn't we say here, larceny of property is a value of less than $100, is petty larceny?
Well, because you have provided that notwithstanding the value of the property, if the person, for instance, acquires it by clobbering somebody in the teeth, it's not petty larceny. When you acquire a public document, perhaps you can't place the value, you don't allege the value, but that is not petty larceny in that case.
That's where we're coming to.
That's why we get stuck here and not to do it. We were thinking that if you didn't allege value and one of these other conditions was not present, then it was
petty larceny.
Oh, I see.
Maybe this should be at the end, though. Mm-hmm. It should be the other ones first and the last one comes up.
This might make more sense if you read through your grand larceny provision and then get the larceny.
Yeah, which is kind of anything else.
Anything else when there's no value.
Well, I look here through sections 13, 14, and 15, and I see again the employment of the term steals. So I suggest that I ask if it wouldn't be appropriate to define steals in the definitional section.